a rough birthday is? It's a rough birthday when you go with your sister outside and you make a wish to your tit well, and then the night doesn't go so well, and you try to get the money back from the tit well, and it almost strangles you to death. It's a rough night. Anyhow, welcome to Outside the Panels. I'm Poder, also known as Michael, and joining me as always is
It's me, Chaz, your friend and maybe foe.
and me, Jack, aka Synesthetic, and the one and only.
And I am Blake. Hello.
Hello. We are switching to our publisher spotlight, which this season we're covering Fantagraphics, which is this really nice kind of indie boutique publisher. They do a lot of cool independent stuff. They also do collections of like all the Crypt of Terror books and a bunch of old Wally Wood art. I know me and Chaz are really familiar with the company. They're located in Seattle. I think Blake and Jack, it might be their first exposure to Fantagraphics. And
Yep, this is my first
yeah,
Fantagraphic read.
that's awesome.
This is a good one to break in
It
with,
is.
too. It's good and weird.
Yeah, and we're starting with one of my favorite creators, French Canadian Michel Fife. I know Chaz is into him too. I haven't really even heard. I don't even know if Blake's read anything by him, but he's the author of Copra, which is awesome. It's like a blend of old school JLA with Avengers, but they're all creator-owned characters. And he does everything with pencil and coloring pencils, and it looks really unique. No one really has his kind of art style. It's awesome. And this is actually one of his first books that was actually released, I believe, in a newspaper. It's about two siblings named Boston and Emily Zegas. It's called Zegas, and it's basically just, I love Blake described it earlier as neorealism. It's a look into these people's lives, which they have normal everyday problems, but also there's absurd shit going on all around them, which I don't know, you could kind of make
Yeah,
sense of it
whatever
or
the fuck
not.
a street mayor is.
The street
I think
mayor.
we know what a street mayor is. We
He's
talked about Weed Jesus not too long ago. He could have been a street mayor.
like Bouncer Weed Jesus.
Yeah. Hey, everything cool? All right, cool. You need help? You just call.
I love
See you
how he
later.
checks their IDs, like his head like teleports out of his own body, and then like his eyeballs, like, or they're not really eyeballs, I don't know what they are, but they like antennae maybe, they like jettison out of his head, and they kind of move like, I feel like they move like fucking dark side eye beams, man, like they're like hard angle turns and shit, and he scans their IDs, and then he's like, okay, you can keep walking in the desert. Like, what the fuck do you need to check these people's IDs for walking in the goddamn desert? It's like
That's the other wild part too, is like there's this big patch of empty desert that you're describing between their house and the big city. Like,
Yeah. Where
where
are
is this
they?
place
I thought
located?
it
What
was
is
in
this
like
world?
gonna be in Vegas, and that's why it was called Zegas, but then obviously it's because that's their last name.
Well, I mean, I kind of thought they were in outer space or something,
It almost
because
seems like outer
it's got this
space.
sci-fi, it's got this like sci-fi element to it,
They're
which is
definitely
really
in outer
interesting.
space at one point, right? Like
Oh yeah, it's
when they bust
they're
out
on like a
the
foreign
titty
planet.
wishing well.
So yeah, so that's what I think is interesting about this book too, is that it's really grounded in both Boston and Emily's problems and situations, while featuring these like hyper abstract almost
Yeah, it's super
like
abstract,
elements
yeah.
or like these really surreal, wild interpretations of stuff. And it almost feels like we're experiencing it more than them. Like, what is it? The observer effect, right? We're seeing how they see everything, in a way, instead of us interpreting it, we're seeing it through them. So like that tit wishing well is probably just some fucking sewer grate or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's gotta be like, there's gotta be a kernel of truth at the bottom of this wild popcorn element. So, but I love the fucking look and feel of this book. It's so
His
cool.
colors are on
The
fire. Like, the colors in this are
man,
fucking
yeah.
insane. Like,
It really aggravates me in like a stupid way when people are this good, when they can draw and color and letter and write this well and tell a story like that. Like, it's just so. Like, man, that's fucking convenient for you. Like,
right? Have a fucking flaw or something already, you know? Have something that you need a crutch for. Somebody's got to come in and do the inks or the colors.
Exactly.
You know?
Like, sure. Like, there's definitely a Jeff Lemirian aspect to this. They're different writers, but the talent is the same. Like, these guys, they're both really great storytellers that can just take everything into their own hands and have his art isn't Fife's art isn't as abstract as Lemire's, but it's definitely got a different flavor. That's very pleasant to look at.
If you like this and you want more abstract, you should check out Panorama
is incredible.
That one gets wild.
It's like Fife's like, Cronenberg story. That's so good.
Yeah,
nice.
I would love to have him go back and color it more now. Like, the art still looks amazing, but imagine that shit in color. Like, if he did a special edition and released it, oh my god,
that'd be pretty wild.
Yeah, but I'm desperately awaiting Copper Volume 8 too, but I can't hate on him because you just said, like, he literally does everything. So
I will say that, so like, I had the digital for this, and I'll definitely be buying the physical copy. Like, I'm double dipping. Luckily, the digital was cheaper online.
I was worried because I've never seen his stuff digital, and to me, it's such a physical book because he uses color pencils and does all his own, you know, lettering by hand, that I thought the colors wouldn't look as good to you guys on digital. So I was a little bit worried about your experience.
I thought it looked good. Tablets and stuff still make colors pop really well.
That's
even
good.
Even, and you can kind of tell it almost has like a textured look on the, like, the yellowness in the pages and stuff. Kind of, that still shows up on the tablet.
That's cool.
But I just liked, like, this is a book that needs to be on the shelf.
Yeah. It looks gorgeous.
It's pretty radical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how it's like selective coloring. Like, a lot of it's just black and white, but then like parts of it are colored.
Mm-hmm.
He
controls your he controls the point of view, and he controls your direction really well.
He
and
controls
he uses color.
Your brain.
Gets inside
you. Subtle mind control.
He has such a psychedelic, trippy style, too, even in Panorama. And even Capra. Capra is probably the least psychedelic of his works, but it still has a lot of moments that are just insane.
It gets pretty psychedelic in some of those volumes.
It does, I can't even think of his name right now, the Doctor Strange guy. It gets real crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we could do a whole mini series on him. He's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if one of us doesn't.
Yeah.
If we get a few more tastes of this, like if Capra comes up when we cover Image, because they published under that one for a little bit, or something. I'm sure we'll revisit.
Or Panorama. Well, who released Panorama? Sure. Dark Horse? Dark Horse did, right?
Yeah. Or they just did the most recent re-release. The cool thing is that he's self-released and self-published everything pretty much at first. So, like, originally, like, Capra single issues are super duper expensive because he only sold them on his website. This one was similar at the beginning. At least it's Zagus 1 and 2 was what this one collects. So like some printed short stories, I imagine, that were probably available on his website. But yeah, this I'm in total agreement with Blake. It's one that I definitely want to add to the shelf at some point because it's super cool. What were you guys' takes? So I guess maybe indulge me a little bit. Do you guys think that some of the wildness, right? The street mayor, the tit wishing well,
the pickpocket,
some of the more exaggerated elements. Yeah. Do you think that that's just like their hyper stylized view of reality through their own lens, or is it supposed to be this weird sort of trippy, like, I don't know, city?
Yeah, I thought I took it as like just a foreign surrounding, which kind of like with the normalized life of like a brother and sister that have a traumatic past of their, you know, spoiler alert, their parents die. You don't see it. They just talk about it. So I guess it's not a super spoiler. But, you know, they're living through trauma. They're both young. Like one's 25 and one's 30, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Boston just has his 30th birthday on panel in the book. And so, you know, they're fairly young. They're trying to get past the drama of their parents. And it's a story about life. It's a you know, it's kind of like a post coming of age story, I guess. But you know, that kind of genre, but with this sci-fi space, foreign alien planet backdrop, which is kind of interesting. But I also just didn't, I mean, if it is that high cons, I mean, I could also see it being that, like, you know, especially because he's depressed. Boston's depressed. So his point of view is going to be a lot different than other people. He's struggling, you know, with with a mental handicap. So
even Emily's, I would imagine, through the same shared trauma.
Yeah.
And her own experiences, it's got sort of a skewed view on things as well. So maybe it's the foreignness of their surroundings.
He like stuck his head in a sewer grate and got that and just, got stuck.
Yeah, because like when he's reaching in, like, I want my money back, right? It's some real like Willy Wonka, Charlie Brown, like, you know, he's like reaching in, I got to get this dough. And then he ends up just puking, I think, because of him being super drunk at the bar. So I was like, man, this is probably just the like something on their thing, like a it's a new city. Look, there's our wishing well. There's our alien street mayor. And it's probably just some homeless guy, you know, just like making sure everything's safe out here.
So you guys were talking about Panorama. Is that what you guys called his other book?
Yeah, Panorama.
Yeah.
Okay, because if you Google it, there's nothing.
Oh, wait.
If you look on Amazon, they have it. It has a guy's face is like morphing on the cover.
I don't know. I thought it was just like surrealist, like on some other dimension or planet or something like that.
Which would be pretty radical too. Like that's a.
I guess I didn't read quite into it as much.
I think maybe I read into it too much.
It's right here, buddy.
I was just telling that all that cool shit was like, kind of going on. Yeah.
It's on Amazon as Panorama by Michelle Pfeiffer. It's got like. It's actually the girl. It's got the girl's like face twisting up. Oh yeah, Chaz has posted it.
Yeah, I
threw it in the chat.
I don't know, man.
I can see it as Chaz's way and also being in space. I definitely feel like their depression and definitely I think also with Boston being a writer and depressed, he could have a creative mind and him being depressed kind of making, you know, wonders out of small mundane things. To kind of make life more interesting, but I could also see it be just this weird future in space because all these outer elements aren't explained at all, which I like in the book because they definitely don't react to any of the crazy stuff. To them, the street mayor is normal. It's normal that she chases, but she kind of acknowledges the thief, the pickpocket guy that steals the $5 from the vendor. She does acknowledge she doesn't know what it was because that thing's crazy. It has a bunch of heads and wearing a coat and it flies off. And then she kind of goes like, I don't even know what that was. Because that's like the only acknowledgement.
Never to be touched on again.
Yeah.
Now she doesn't even go home and be like, dude, this guy stole my last $5. And then
I chased him through an arcade and squished him out of his suit. Like, whoa.
It was like oversized mechanic semen, like bundled together in an overcoat.
I wanna
skulls coming out of it.
Jump ahead real quick. I have a question for you guys. Gina definitely fucked that guy that played with Okazan, right?
Yeah, that's why she texted
him. I'm a bad person.
I
love that. I mean, everyone's been in the early stages of relationships, and I've definitely been in early stage relationships before I got married when I was depressed, and I understand what he's doing when Boston just ignores that I'm a bad person, is completely paying attention to his sister, and then he just gets that text from her, hey, what are you doing? Come over. And he just runs out of the house down towards the bus to jump on the bus.
I like too that that's immediately following a scene where he's disavowed the notion of love.
Yeah.
Like, no, you don't love this guy. You don't love this guy that you've been seeing for a couple months. That's crazy. Just cut it off. That's it. Cut it out,
dude. That
and then it's like,
awkward.
I fucking love this girl. I gotta get out of here. Like, see you. Bye. Click.
So my favorite, as far as like the surrealist shit goes, was the when she like. Breaks his cactus and they go to buy another cactus and some shady fucking weirdo like comes out of an alley. He's got like his face is like dripping with nasty yellow shit and he's like, hey, you guys want this cactus? And it's like this little pink fucking, I don't even know what it looks like, just off. Like, I would not buy that.
It looks like a dick.
It looked like a dick. Yeah,
I don't know, it looks weirder than that. Like,
that's fair. It looked like a
It's like a ghost uterus, indeed. Technically.
You guys that's got that.
Oh, okay.
It's technically.
That cactus's soulmate was his cactus, and his cactus died and went up to the ether. So then it got taken by him so he could also die and go up to the ether and join his cactus. That was the plot of that issue.
So the that's man awesome. That gave him the cactus was the cactus?
I don't know.
Because that's whose soul goes up.
Is it the old man?
Yeah,
oh, I was wrong.
Like
I didn't realize that was the old man. I took that the wrong way, and I've read this a bunch of times. I always thought it was the first cactus.
Because he, like, right when they're like, oh, thanks for this pink uterine thing that looks like you sculpted it out of the sand that sticks together, you know, the wet
kinetic sand
that you could sculpt. Yeah, it looks like that. And then he rounds the corner and it's just
falls
like
down, dies,
my yeah. job's done. Just dies like you see the soul leave his body, and I was like, wow.
I've heard this like three
this
times.
A good deed in a weary world.
Yeah. You guys are probably right, but I just took it as maybe, well, it's obviously the old man, but
I just wouldn't buy a
sketchy-looking
cactus off like an old nasty man in an alley in an overcoat.
So, it makes me think of Little Shop of Horrors when he's like, I didn't see anything I wanted. And then there was a total eclipse. And then there was a cool plant. And he sold it to me for $1.05. Like, what?
It makes me think of my old job.
It's the same price as freedom. Freedom costs $1.05.
My old job, my former superior got fired. And I got his old desk before I was let go as well. And when I got there was a literal dick cactus on there. It was like a cactus that died. It looked like a dick. And I was like, what is this? And I kept on trying to throw it away. And it was like cursed. The cleaners would come and they would never throw it away when I put it in the trash. And they put it back up on the desk. So I'd come back in again and the dick cactus would be there again. I'd be like, God damn it, I don't want to stare at this dick cactus all day.
That's a good name to call someone you don't like.
Dick cactus?
It is. It's a pretty good band name too when you think about it.
You're being a big dick cactus right now, buddy.
Yeah.
So it's split
dick
up.
Cactus would be a good like punk band.
It's split up in
I'd go see him.
A few stories. It's birthday, cactus, arcade, and then it's trying to find then it's plum. And then it's trying to find
Plum was so
Plum's
weird.
So good and funny.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And it's trying to find the right beat, parts one and two. And then it is that after kind of story where they're older, which is called, doesn't have a name, I don't think. I don't think that last story has
a name. Yeah, that was the cool one that each panel is like the letter of Zegas.
Yeah.
It's like Z-E-G.
Yeah,
that was dope. That was a cool little way to end it.
Felt like a nice closure, but also that little tease at the end even.
Yeah.
He could definitely revisit these characters. I would come back willingly to see what they're doing later on. It seems like they're
I want them to make just an issue about the Streetmare.
Yeah, that'd be great.
To see what the Streetmare is like on a day-to-day.
I want to see the end of the world through his eyes, man. Like not the Streetmares, but like through Fife's, like, cuz if you get a little bit of that in Arcade, it opens with like Emily monologuing about how it would be nice for the world to end, kind of, right? Like, if everything ended, there'd be that fear at first, but, like, it would kind of be okay, right?
Yeah, in any, like, end of the world scenario, like, what always freaked me out was, like, in the Comet movies and stuff, when, like, some of those people, like, stand on the shore and, like, watch that giant wave come at you. Like, I don't think I'd want to do that.
Deep in the back Taleone holds their dad
cool.
And they just get crushed by the wave right at the beach. They're like, we're going to die. Let's die together.
I mean, like,
I think
poetic,
I would, like,
but
close up the windows and know that it was coming. I take some solace in being, like, surrounded by familiarity.
Yeah.
And then just being like, wow, cool, I'm going to blink and everything will be gone. But,
like, lie to yourself, be like, I'm going to read that book I haven't ever read that I wanted to, and, like, start it. And
no,
if
I'm being honest, it'd be like
a Molotov cocktail at random building.
It'd be full Netflix. I'd be like, I'm going to read that one book I never started. But actually, before that one, I should read this other book. No, you know what? I'm going to get all the books that I think I want to read, and I'm going to put them all in a row. And then I'm just going to keep scrolling over each one, not deciding which one to read. And then I'll be out of time, and I'll just go to bed. So it won't matter.
I like his cast of characters in the back too. So Jack, if you look back there, you could see that Ortega does hail from parts unknown, and he's a little nosy, but always means well. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, that really explains nothing.
I'm picturing now that he actually looks like what was it, the Ultimate Warrior? Because he came from parts unknown, oh, yeah. Right?
It's just the Ultimate Warrior, homeless and going and protecting him.
Homeless and awesome. What's shaking up? The ropes and looking at IDs.
What's up with the weird drawing of Gina at the end where she has that crazy jacket that has all sorts of shit in it?
I have no idea. Know. I was just looking at that.
Yeah.
I think it's.
I'm
some
still
of
thinking
it's just
about the end of the world.
Cool for the sake of being cool.
So the end of the world, I feel like, does that symbolize what's about to happen in the story? Because she's about to basically throw her job away because she's tired of how she's being treated, or just her dealing with the depression and things she imagines?
I think it's the way of catastrophizing certain things so that the more normal things seem palatable. So her considering the stress and pressures of her job that we get to experience later in this segment, like her thinking like, oh my God, this could be the end of the world. But what about the actual end of the world? Maybe that'll come into terms with that abstract will make this reality a little bit more tangible or pleasing.
And it looks, it looks like she's like a...
And ultimately, it all comes down to one choice, chicken or lamb.
I hope film directors aren't as
are
big of
assholes.
Are you
talking about the pinup? Just the pinup at the end?
Yeah.
Like the... Okay.
Is this like her with the huge jacket and he has like little robots on the side and stuff like that?
I just thought it was a pinup.
He probably
just thought
it
was like, you're like, oh, I'll just put this in there. Like,
yeah.
So
that's also kind of what I think about some of like the crazy surreal stuff is like, it's just cool for the sake of being cool.
Yeah.
What I have questions about was
the last page with the
the brick, man. What the fuck is up with the brick and the titty
it's
wheel?
It's cracked.
Yeah, it just ends with the...
It gets thrown out, and then the tit wheel's gone.
It's gone.
Part of me is thinking that's the magic of the fantasy eroding,
kind of.
Right?
Yeah, because then it like goes
the
away.
end of the story leaves them both sort of in different positions, right?
Yeah, she. I guess we're jumping way ahead, but whatever. I'll go back to the director comment I wanted to make earlier. But yeah, at the end, there's that scene with the tit well and the bricks coming out, and then in the brick it's thrown, and then it's just a normal, like, brick, like, little, just a little brick stand with no tit well on it anymore. That's a good analogy that's the fantasy kind of going away.
I'm missing a page in the digital.
Yeah, I'm going to turn I'm going to show you it right now. I'm going to turn the virtual off, my background off, so you can see it.
Yeah, that's all I see too is just the brick falling out, and then it
I'll show you guys.
And you're like, what?
One second.
Either that or it's like E.T.
All right.
The Titwell's job is done, and now it can return to its home planet, having made two people a little more comfortable.
Do you see it?
Oh, no, that's where ours ends.
Yeah, it's just but it doesn't show that the tit's gone.
See it right there, though? It's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so if it's not that, then it's this well definitely getting such a boner that it pushes a brick out.
Yeah,
like, yeah, it's just like it just zones in on the brick, zooms in on the brick, though. It doesn't signify that the well is gone. It just shows the brick on the ground.
Oh, that's true. That is just a brick. Out. You're right. Yeah. I thought it was the well at first. Yeah.
That's why I was thinking, like, it's just that fantasy eroding. There's a small piece of it now off of it.
See, I saw like an emergence and birth or something, but I was like, what the fuck does that mean though? Like, what is emerging?
I like that
we are here too. Right beforehand, they're talking about new jobs and who they're banging or whatever, and even before that, she's about to resign herself to a non-artistic job that looks like probably I imagine like a slaughterhouse or something.
Yeah.
Or like a fast food place. Like, here's your uniform and apron or something. Like,
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Here's your hat. So I thought maybe it was like if you're thinking it's birth, right? It's the birth of this next stage where they're not going to use this titwell sort of anymore.
I don't know.
We'll merge the two things together. If the titwell's real, I would never, like, if a titwell existed like this, in the real world, I would never, ever not throw whatever change I had on me in it whenever I walk by it. despite how gross the thing fucking looks. Like, it doesn't even look like a tit. It looks like a fucking zit that, like, bursts open and, like, eats your money, you know? So, like, ugh. But I would not be able to resist. There's no way. No matter what job I have, I'm going to throw fucking pennies, quarters, dimes, nickels, everything above. Especially Canadian, the stuff I can't spend down here. That's going in the well. I'm feeding them tits.
I thought it was almost just like kind of like unexplainable weirdness.
Phenomena.
Yeah, it's like a fucking plumbus. What is it? What does it do? Why does it?
Everybody's got one, but how are they made?
Yeah.
Tit wells. We've all seen them, but where do they come from? For the next half hour, we're going to talk about the birth, life, and death of Titwell.
I mean, it's technically a character that has three important scenes in the graphic novel that is 100 pages. So okay, I mean, it's a character that we see three. It's a so supposedly a like point. A living, yeah, breathing thing. It interacts with our main characters twice. There's also kind of like the question of what she wished for. She said it was a wish for Boston. Which it kind of feels like her main deal for him is she wants him to find love, because that's a reoccurring motif too, is her trying to hook him up and stuff like that.
I think get him away from Gina, who he's with by the end of the book, because it's his like sort of ex, right?
Yeah.
Who's now with somebody else and they're kind of still doing stuff, but maybe it's not serious. So yeah, there's probably some wish there of like, give him a clean break, give him a new love.
Yeah, I didn't get it. Okay, well, so first off, I thought for like the first couple pages that they were like, I didn't realize they were brother and sister, and I thought they were like a couple, and I was like, why is she with him? He's just being like a asshole.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wait.
Goes wah after Steph.
Yeah,
I don't want to go out. Wah, but I don't want to stay in. Wah.
And he's
parties
like,
make me sick.
I don't celebrate birthdays anymore. They're meaningless. She's like, so you don't like my present? And he's like, no. It's stupid.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to your surprise party?
Like, no, you really shouldn't have. And then not only does she get him a present, she like gets him like a sexy big titted bartender who's like just throwing herself at him, and he's just like,
yeah, and then
maybe
like,
I'll get drunk and I'll hang out with her for a few months and I'll hurt her feelings before she hurts mine.
Yeah,
and
then they get back to the
I don't really want to do that
apartment.
It's like, good for you, bud. Like,
he's just like, nope, I'm dipping.
Yeah, too hung up on the past to see what could be his future.
I liked Manny. I think I liked him more than Gina.
Oh, yeah. Manny's 100%.
Yeah.
Manny never sends a text that says, I'm a bad person. So like, she must be a good person.
She didn't even need to have like an oversized perfect rack. Like, she was cool on her own. But the giant titties helped. I was like, all right, you know, good for you.
Helps to get those tips, too.
You're chill and stacked. Like, that's dope.
Yeah.
Hopefully Boston has another chance.
Best kind of bartender. I don't know. I don't think Boston's going to give himself any sort of chance.
No, I think
there's sort of a self-defeating theme to him.
Which is funny.
Sense of like giving
like
up.
You say like he's self-defeating, like, and Manny's even like, she's even like, oh, you're self-deprecating. That's hot. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, how can I want to meet this woman? Like, oh, you think like self-deprecating gets you hot? What's up, baby girl? Like, you come talk to Blake. Like,
they feel so familiar, which is besides all the absurd and crazy shit in the book, like these are such familiar situations to all of us because they're such human situations that happen to Emily in Boston. But I wish there was more stuff because just this one book makes me fall in love with these characters so much. Like, I'd hang out with Emily in Boston anytime, even though Emily kind of seems more like a bitch at the end of the book. She seems more, do you think she seems changed? Because I don't remember, she seems a little bit more conceited to me, or...
I don't know.
I don't think it's fair to say that she's more of a bitch. It seems like she's more somebody who is not willing to wallow anymore, like Boston.
I'm just going
to
say, I would not hang out with Boston. He's a dick.
Yeah, like he's definitely ready to just like roll over kind of and say like, well, this is it. This is all it's ever going to be. And this is as good as I'm going to get. Whereas she's saying,
I love Emily as a character.
I'm going to resign myself to this job, but I got to do it.
I just
kind of like,
I love Emily as a character. I'm not like hating on as a character, but I just feel like that conversation that she has at the end with Denise is much more different than any other conversation she has in the book. I mean, maybe it is the wallowing, but to me, it came off of like her almost not caring about her artistic side anymore, which is fine if she doesn't want to wallow in it. But it just seemed like the conversation was more shallow than any of the conversations she had previously in the book.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I saw it as like a strengthening, especially because like before, you know, where she's struggling, you know, with the unemployment deal and she's struggling with dealing with her brother. I mean, she chases down a weird alien semen skull monster thing for her last $5.
To give to a guy. I love Emily as a character. I'm not talking about, that's like the Emily that I love. I'm just saying at the end.
But yeah, I think she's just confident. Like, especially because they're like, they're going to give you guys all that money for that land. And you're just saying, she's like, no, we want to live there. Fuck them.
You might be right. It might be your design too. I think you guys are probably right. I mean, I love Emily as a character.
She does look a lot different. Like, she obviously has like she's not broke anymore. Like he draws her with her hair done. And you know, they're drinking, you know, these really good margs. But yeah, that whole scene, like, yeah, like she's like, her friend even tells her, she's like, you're my lucky charm. They never make them this strong. And she's like, you said it, not me. So, I mean, she's like humble, but kind of, she's a little cocky, but like, I feel it's deserving. Like, she's finally like, this is who I am, and I look good, and I'm making money, and I'm going to get drunk, and life's not that bad for me, and my brother's still an asshole.
Yeah, that's a good way to interpret it. I think maybe it was just the design. Like I said, I love her as a character, and it's great that, oh yeah, back on the director thing. Do you guys think directors are that much of assholes to like their grips and people that work there? Work for them?
Are we talking about when she's putting those puppets together?
Yeah, when she gets pushed to her limit and finally like stands up to the director, which is a great scene. But, you know, the fact that...
Some of them, I'm sure.
The fact that he doesn't understand like the things he's asking for the puppets can't be done in 2 minutes. You know, the eyes being changed and cameras put in.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. That's the I'm in charge here kind of guy's mentality for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think that... So I misread that because I thought she was like, I thought they were like making robots. Like, I thought she was working.
That's
at some
what I thought
like
at first.
Tech place making robots, and they came in and they were like, oh, we want to do these like better, prettier robots. And she's like, you broke the fucking eyeball, you little man child.
$1,000 eyeball. I did like the when she's given the director like the real talking to.
Yeah, that's great.
There's that transition almost of. Like him fading away and it not really like matching up with her own perspective on it. And then we get that world ending sort of vision again, like the ground is opening up and everything's going to get destroyed.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking, I thought it was an analogy, you know, kind of for the fact she's ending this part of her life because she's standing up to the director and, you know, going and being unemployed and going into something new.
And then the boss who, in that last panel that we see him, says we have to talk with his like pink sad eyes. It looks like Jack Lemmon from Glengarry Glen Ross. Like we know what's coming. I saw those eyes and I was like, oh, he's been teared up. He's so proud of her, but he's got to make the cut.
Yeah. And then so immediately the next panel, she's packing up her shit in a box.
Like, as we mentioned earlier about how the coloring in this graphic collection, because it's not really a graphic novel and it's not like a collection of issues either. So it's kind of, it's like a story collection, but, it's selective coloring. Like he doesn't color everything, and kind of the coloring, typically has like a pretty good purpose. And we see that here, like when this dude walks into a room, like no one's clothes are colored, but he's got this purple jacket and yellow pants. Even when he's in the background on the panels, like, Fife makes sure to color his outfit like accordingly, and so he purposely like guides your gaze while reading this to like follow this person. And so it's like, you know, I don't, it kind of like builds tension too, because you know this guy's an asshole and something's like about to go down. But he really, like, as a reader, as a graphic, so like when you're writing prose, you know, you guide people differently through plot and words, and graphic narratives are so much different because you use like, you know, guidelines and focal points, and Fife uses color, and that's pretty fucking dope. Like I haven't seen that done a lot.
Yeah, that actually does a good job of putting us, the reader, in the room with our own inability to say anything or jump to Emily's defense. So we're like complicit almost. Like his use of color makes us have to follow him around like we're one of the employees also, which is pretty wild. So when she loses her job, it almost feels extra heartbreaking for me because I wanted to be like, hey, man, yeah, she's right. This guy's just being a dick. But if I say that to a tablet, I'm going to look like I'm an insane person. So I just kept my head down and moved right along. Nothing to see here. Keep my job reading comics for another day.
And then the arcade has more color than I think any other part of the book, too. Like I think that was like the most.
I think besides the nightclub scene.
Oh, the nightclub too, with the music.
Yeah, that.
But the nightclub has like the explosion of color, whereas like this is all color. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
this is like alive. Well, the nightclub scene is pretty choice too, for sure.
Both these scenes are probably my two favorite scenes: the arcade scene and then every nightclub scene up into the explosion. We'll talk about KB in a bit, but KB's glorious.
Man, I'm surprised. This almost looks. I know that we're saying he uses like color pencil, but like the arcade coloring almost looks.
It might be color marker.
It's almost got like watercolor.
That might be watercolor too.
You know what I mean? Like,
they make watercolor pencils. Yeah. They're really expensive.
Oh shit!
And they look. That might be what this is.
Watercolor pencils are fucking sick.
That sounds like such a hard other medium to master, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard enough to make like colored pencils really pop. And then you add this other thing on top of it and still produce something that looks this good is just a sheer marker of talent.
I think either is definitely an arcade scene. I think it's either watercolors, because I know he uses color pencils. Maybe he's using the watercolor pencils, because that scene really does look like watercolors now that I look at it more. Or even, I guess it could be the color watercolor pencils. Either way, dude, someone sat down and did this, which is an impressive feat. It's so gorgeous. Yeah. And the way he
did that by himself.
Yeah, by himself. And the way he comes in with the colors, like you'll see the other colors come in just like square chunks. Like how he does that makes it look good without like making it look distorted. It's
wild
crazy.
Too. Like the like Zipitone work almost too that he's got with like in Plum especially. There's all those like dots and things lining important scenes and backgrounds. It's super nuts. The way it bounces between all of it is so deft.
His other stuff, does he do everything by himself?
Yeah.
Is he still, he art letters, he
everything.
Colors everything?
Yep.
Yeah. I'd definitely say, like, go check out Capra for sure.
You
like,
love if it. You're, it's great.
If you're somebody who's, like, superhero comic oriented, like, not even predominantly, but somebody who's more versed in, like, the hero stuff, that's a good bridge between those two worlds.
Nice. I got excited because I looked it up on Comixology and it had the Unlimited badge on it. And I was like, yes, it's only the first issue.
Fucking
teasers.
Every time.
They're not cheap either because they kind of, I know Image releases them, but I think even on Amazon, they're all $20 at least.
Yeah.
I got all of them. They're so good.
Panorama's pretty cheap. I'm thinking about ordering.
It's fantastic. It's shorter, but it's great. It's like,
and
it's
gnarlier too.
Yeah. It's like his version of a sexual Cronenberg tale is what it remind me of. It'll make you,
like,
if you like, like Cunnilingus like me, it'll make you never think of Cunnilingus the same again.
Interesting.
Yeah. It'll probably make you think about it like Michael Douglas thinks about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's definitely.
That's like a death.
Yeah.
That shit almost killed me.
Go ahead and try and just we just gave you the wildest, like most convoluted Rubik's Cube by saying the things if you think about Cunnilingus like Michael does, and if I said like Michael Douglas does, and now you've gotta unfold that somehow with no more clues from us. That's it. That's good luck with that fucking Hellraiser configuration.
And for the listeners too, Copper really is like, it's a love letter to old school, I would say like 90s. I think he's around me, Chaz, and Blake's age. I think Michelle Five, I think he's mid 30s. It reminds me of like the 90s, early 90s comics that I grew up on when I was like five. of DC and Marvel. Like, all, he has all these analogs in it, and they're all done so well. My favorite character is the Nova analog, because I loved Nova as a kid, and then, like, the character is so much more badass than Capra, and he actually, like...
Yeah, they kind of merge him, too, with, I would say, like, it's kind of like Nova, but with, like, Shade the Changing Man underneath.
Yeah.
Like, it's this real cool fusion of, like, those Vertigo wild ideas with, like, the Suicide Squad, but everybody from every universe is on there. Like, you could do whatever you want with it. It's pretty wild.
It's like the best Suicide Squad comic ever. I mean, people definitely died like Suicide Squad too. Don't get attached to people, but there's some that stick around a lot.
Yeah. It's tight.
It's, I want,
this book is also tight.
This book is also tight. Did you get, oh, but did you notice, Chaz, that the guy that played with that group is the name of the criminal syndicate in Capra?
Yeah.
Focazon? Yeah.
It was a nice little, like,
Easter egg.
I think that's the name of his, like, publishing company too, right?
Is it? It might be. It should be in the front when it says it was published by Capra Press is his publishing company.
Oh, okay.
And then Okazon is like the main bad guys of Capra, and then that's what that Gina says the guy I used to play with was Okazon, which as me as a Capra reader was like, I love, because this came out way before Capra, right?
It had to have. This yeah. feels like it would have come out before Capra.
So he's definitely had some of these ideas and names rolling around in his head for a long time. Yeah, I think this came out 2017 originally. Is that right? Or is that when it was republished? Oh, 2009, 2012. So way earlier. Yeah, 2017 is when it came out in Fantagraphics.
Yeah. Capra was 2012.
It's
so he that but so Image is that like what Image did with like Brubaker's Brubaker and Phillips's Criminal, like they're like they picked it up and republished it,
yeah, almost like licensed, I think, or okay. something.
And his company is another name too, Bergen Street Press, remember, because that's what all the Capra books were called when he published them.
Yeah, and I think they also, I mean, like they were publishing new ones also, but I don't know that they did as well in singles as they did when he was self-publishing them.
His newsletter said they released three, and then COVID hit, and then he decided just to release the trade, and then that's been pushed back since COVID. That's Volume 8 that I've been waiting on, which was supposed to come out in October, and then didn't, and I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, because I saw on Comixology there's like 36 issues or something.
Yeah, it's seven volumes. There's seven volumes and three issues that were released single. I haven't read any of the single issues, though. I should have, because I feel like they're probably dope. I've never read one of his comics as a single issue, but they probably look and feel cool.
Yeah, I could see how he might have a request for like a different kind of paper stock or something.
Yeah, which is paper, and this is
the
so thick.
Good paper stock.
Yeah, it's real good. Like, it's such thick paper that every time I turn it, I have to make sure I'm not getting the pages stuck together and I'm not skipping something.
That's how Terror Assaulter is. I feel like
Fantagraphics.
Yeah. Like they probably just Fantagraphics prints on good paper and stuff.
Starseeds is like that too.
Like, you know, embossed and spot gloss covers and stuff. I mean, like, dude, their fucking books are so nice and they're not that expensive.
No, their books are all great. Yeah. I literally was rereading some of the books I had yesterday about Behemoth just because how good they look. I reread Purple Oblivion, which is great. And I'm trying to get everything they've made. But all of Fantagraphics.
That's my plan today. Is just I'm gonna Behemoth out and read Nottingham. Like that's all I want to do.
Behemoth binge.
Behemoth binge. I've had these books for a while, and like I had to. I don't know. Last week I was busy like getting ready for Propose, and I was like knocking out a lot of his stuff and thinking about that. So actually, and then I also I figure like today is my chill day, and then like you know next week's gonna be all. Getting caught up with ROM stuff and reading Paradiso and shit.
Yeah, and Black Mamba is great.
I want to read Black Mamba, but I'm like scared to fucking touch it because he's like signed and sketched it. And I'm like, this is
it's cool he did that on all of our books. He drew the two characters of mine too and signed it ROM.
Yeah.
So Zegas is great. It's beautiful. The colors are fantastic. It's such a unique experience. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of more Fantagraphics books. I really implore everyone listening to check out their website and also hit up your LCS because most of them, like Chaz does at Maximum, will give you that 20% discount if you have a pull box. it's going to be cheaper getting it that way than on Amazon with Fantagraphics. You're going to be paying kind of a lot on Amazon for anything they have. So I implore you to hit your LCS up and order some Fantagraphics books. They're all good. And they have people that come, they have artists and creators from every country. So a lot of times there'll be a book that's been out in Spain or France for like 15 years and Fantagraphics will take it and completely translate it to English, which is cool. There's a lot of cool books I've got that way. And later this season, we're going to have Charles Glaubitz on for Starseeds, which is this 6-book series he's created. And he's doing just like Fife on there. Glaubitz does everything in his books. He draws it, colors it, letters it. And it's a really cool psychedelic journey involving quantum mechanics that I can't wait till all these boys read it. Jack, you're going to love that shit. Hopefully we can get a digital for you. Yeah, it's awesome. And Glaubitz also is like studied in quantum physics. So it'd be cool to talk to him and kind of get his update. I believe volume 3 is coming out in October. So hopefully we get a little preview for him what's going to come next in Starseeds. And then we got unique stuff like Terra Assaulter coming up, which I know most of us can't wait to talk about. And then we have a non-fiction fictionalized take. It's basically a non-fiction book, but it's done through comic drawing. It's called The Machine Never Blinks, which is a really eye-opening experience. It's kind of talked about how we've lost all personal freedom and how we've been recorded and losing freedom since basically the Middle Ages and how we're constantly monitored today, it's a really educational book. And I can't wait for us all to talk about that because that definitely gives you a lot of brain food to talk about. And then, of course, next Wednesday is the big day, the day we've been teasing, the day we're all excited about. It's an evening with Ram V, who is our first miniseries. He's someone we all love. And we've had creators on. All the creators have been great and are very talented. I'm shaking in my boots a little bit for this one, but I think we're all pretty pumped. And he's such a nice guy. It's cool he's coming on to talk to us. Really pumped for that. And that's going to be dropping on the 24th. So instead of a normal Wednesday episode that week, we're just going to do the Ram episode. So everything can be focused on that.
Hell yeah.
Because, you know, he's very nice. He said he would be on our show. And like I said, he was our first miniseries. Hopefully we can do this now as we grow as a show. We'll be able to get everyone on, hopefully, that we've covered. So one day we'll get Brubaker, Spurrier, and who we're covering next, which if you follow our Twitter, I did leave some Morse code to hint in a retweet of who the next creator is. But you got to know Morse code, I guess, or just go on Google and look for a translator. It's pretty easy.
Don't they teach it in school?
Do they?
No.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
Yeah, they were like, we don't.
Everybody
need
knows
anymore,
Morse code now,
and we don't need to teach these kids foreign languages because you know English is the only one that matters.
Yeah,
and
they replaced cursive with Morse code.
We will teach
code.
Them. Yeah, no Morse, no art classes, more Morse code.
We're gonna dumb down math severely, but definitely Morse code.
Yeah,
that's sad. Math
all our
is
kids,
really
dot, dash, all our dash. Kids are gonna be idiots, but they're. They could talk to truckers on those ham radios.
That makes me feel old because when I was in school, they still did cursive. I did not know they're teaching Morse code now. The more you learn. And they dumbed down math.
No, they don't. We're joking. They don't really teach students Morse code.
Yeah, okay, cool. They really dumbed down math too, or no? That's just also a joke.
Yeah, I was about to say like, whoa.
No, they did that. That Common Core is really stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually like really confusing, but also really stupid.
So. No, Common Core is
awesome.
Really
we
like.
Just went to a tangent because
it's
kind of fun
bad.
To ramble. Hopefully, we get some more unique takes on this, and we could capture the magic of Chaz talking about the first issue of Batman from our next creator that's going to be on. His description of it was our next creator we're covering, not going to be on. If only we could have him on, then that would also be another milestone, which that would be fun. Anyone else got anything they want to add or put in or advertise?
I just want to really appreciate the fact that we convinced you that they replaced cursive with Morse code. It's awesome.
I just thought, yeah, I mean,
I'm proud of that.
You set things that sound like us. They don't think other languages are foreign.
The trust,
like, I could see
the trust that you have in us
you know,
we're is beautiful. Yeah. And I appreciate it.
We need to learn how to intercept the Russians, man. No more electric tampering.
A bunch of 6-year-olds learning Morse code.
Like, I'm really inspired after
they all speak in Morse code too.
Like, you're on you do other podcasts, you can always shout them out as well too, because you're on X's X.
Oh yeah, I do.
X's for podcast, right?
I do a segment on X's for podcast every now and then. If you guys read X-Men, it's pretty much every week we go over. We have different groups talk about each new X issue. They're just little quick bits about each issue. It's fun to listen to. After you read it. You can follow, they're at X's for podcast on Twitter. They're a bunch of good guys. I do shows with them sometimes and hitting up that ever expanding Marvel X-Men library and talking about it on Sundays.
Yeah. I can't even imagine like having a collection of every X-Men book ever. Like,
I'm trying.
That would be
He's trying to do it. I've seen the pictures. Your Spider-Man collection's massive too. Yeah.
Well, we could see the evidence right there back behind him almost too.
And as always, you guys can always check I Wouldn't Be in Podcast and Wasn't for Fred and Johnny Alpha, and they're still cracking it out on Nerds from the Underground. You could always check them out at Nerds From. Also check out Kevin and Bob's podcast, Word Bros Podcast. And anyone else know a podcast? I felt like we should always shout out to the people in the community. Anyone I'm not thinking of.
If you've got a podcast and you listen to us and you want a shout out from these four cool dudes,
post and
you just tweet
us.
At us and we'll
and
make it happen.
Send us $19.99 to each of our PayPals.
Unless you're a comic skater.
Or fans of that one guy who tried to have us, that might be comic skate related, that the religious comic group that tried to have us change our name. We're not associated with them, by the way, if you're listening, dude.
If he is, he really likes it because he hasn't said shit. So
I don't know how he'd like a bunch
and
of
we definitely have not
like
made it too
we
clear
it on
ever
one
since
episode.
That first one that we are not
we
associated.
On
yeah, because fuck him. Who cares?
Now that's...
Let him pray about it. I don't give a shit.
I love that he tried to scare me with the fact that his website's not even named that. It's a segment on a newspaper article they have, and I'm like... This isn't even the same thing. Like,
not remotely.
No.
Rom's going to be on next week. And then we have, for the rest, we have B-Con and Rachel Silverstein coming on for our Dreaming episode. And then we have Dave Dwanch and Brockton McKinney coming back for our Terror Assaulter episode.
Hey, the boys.
So we got a few more guests coming on, but Ron will be our last proper interview for the year, which I think, or this season, not the year, which will be good. I think I don't want to crush Jack because I feel like I'm sorry that I scheduled this season like this.
No more interviews this year.
No more three recordings in a week.
Draw the line.
Yeah, no more three recordings in a week.
No, I'm just kidding. Three recordings in a week with creators, especially is a little intense, but
we'll separate them. That's on me. I'm sorry, but we love you guys for listening.
No, it's cool.
Shout out to you guys real quick, because we should and we will post our Discord link again, because we have a lot more followers now than when we first posted it. We posted it and we had like 10 followers, and now we have a lot more than Nicolas Cage in that movie.
I want to see Nicolas Cage and Neil
Brandon
in a movie.
I want to see Nicolas Cage play
Neil Ghost Friday. What's it called? Spirit of Vengeance? Is that what the sequel's called?
It doesn't matter. It's the only two shitty Ghost Rider movies I've made.
Nicolas Cage drew his face as a skull to scare people, and Chaz has the pictures in the back. Look up Nicolas Cage and makeup for Ghost Rider 2 to get this wonderful image. Nicolas Cage is always a good way.
I think that Nicolas Cage and Neil Breen need to team up and make a movie that's half of it is Nicolas Cage playing Neil Breen. And the other half is Neil Breen.
Face off
Nicolas
too, dude.
Cage.
Face off too. Nicolas Cage, Neil Breen. Let's do it.
Yeah. Now, what was his evil twin movie that they just that he just came out with?
Oh, the new horror movie,
Twisted Pair.
There we go.
No.
Now he's even. Now
Willy's
he's
Wonderland.
Sadder.
Are you talking about Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, Willy's
he's
Wonderland.
He's upset.
Willy's Wonderland is supposed to be awful, and he doesn't say
shit.
A word in it.
Look
the whole movie.
Sad.
Nicolas Cage doesn't have one line. He doesn't talk.
That's why it's awful.
Yeah.
You got to give him. You got to give him room to emote.
Yeah, that's what
over
he doesn't talk once.
He's been on like a really good role with movies. That's a bummer because like,
I mean,
Jiu-Jitsu was so stupid but awesome. He's like this stoned
in all honesty,
dead
he made
samurai.
A good movie since Raising Arizona.
That sounds awesome.
I mean,
I like Mandy and
Mandy's awesome. And you know what?
Color Out of Space.
Face Off is good. Color Out of Space I need to see. Face Off is good. It might be stupid.
Face Off is iconic.
Yeah, it's good.
I could watch Face Off for hours.
Yeah. My face. Oh.
I would get my face off. To watch Face
Anyhow,
Off.
Anyhow, I'm Michael, also known as Poet Air. You can find me at Poet Air 33 on Twitter. You can find the podcast at Outside The with a zero instead of an O. And you can find us on YouTube and Tumblr at Outside The Panels. And then where can they find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter as well, at Chaz Simons.
You can find me on Twitter at @sin_aesthetics with the next, or on Instagram at @sin_aesthetic, and on my SoundCloud, Sin Aesthetic, I threw up a surprise Lil Debbie remix. So check it out.
The one from the other day.
Yeah,
it slaps.
Slapper.
And I'm Blake. You can find me on BTMorgan85 on Twitter and Instagram.
And I was gonna list Nicolas Cage's social media, but he doesn't have one because I guess he hates it, which is a shame. But
what?
He's got one. I bet it's just for like super famous secret rich people to say their crazy stuff. It's like Twitter 2 or something, the sequel that none of us can get into.
But
yeah. Illuminati Twitter.
As always, be good to yourself. Yeah. Be good to Nicolas Cage. Look up that Nicolas Cage picture. And also be good to Neil Breen. And look up any film Neil Breen's done. Twisted Pair. It's a great movie.
Quality films.
They are quality films. All filmed here in sunny Las Vegas. At CCCU, most of them, at night, when no one's there, probably for free. take us out, Chaz.
Make sure you turn the page and wash your hands.